We get signal. My screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackers.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Dev Random Show on Signal. Today, we're going to talk about BrewCon, the wrap-up, and we got some specials, but I'm not going to spoil that. In our studio, we got GMC. Hi, GMC.
Hi there.
We got Yuri.
Good evening, everybody.
We got Brainsmoke.
Oh, hi.
And Psychic.
Good evening.
Hey, well, hear you in a second, and we'll tell you about something very special. Okay, that special has to wait for a minute. This gives me some time to tell you a little bit about our communications. You can Twitter us. Yes, yes, it's the bird, it's the bird. You can use the hashtag signal, And the other option is to send us an email, signal@hackerspaces.org. Or if you prefer to use IRC, you can go to Hackerspaces Signal on Freenode. Welcome back to Signal, your favorite Hackerspaces radio station. We got a very special special guest on the line. It's Johannes Grenzfuhrer. And Johannes, how are you doing? This is Fish Talking.
I'm doing fine, just excellent. I'm actually at NoiseBridge, the hackerspace in San Francisco. And I'm not only at NoiseBridge, I'm sitting in a coffin.
Is that the same coffin which is printed in the heart or something like that?
Well, yes, it is the coffin that will be put in the ground on Saturday here as part of the Ars Electronica conference. And we will bury people in the coffin, in the ground.
Whoa.
But we don't just like bury the people in the ground, we bury them in couples because they will have sex in the coffin.
Whoa, that sounds total new.
Yes, it's the 6 feet under club because we are referring to the Miles High Club, but not too many people have sex in a coffin underground, and we want to do that because we are here in San Francisco at doing Ars Electronica conference, and it's a conference about sex and technology. And this year we have the specific theme of sex, tech and space, so outer space, cyberspace, architectural space, and also confined spaces.
What can people expect when they come to Ars Electronica, Johannes?
Okay, it's a pretty interesting mixture of academic talks and sheer like craziness. So tonight we have our opening night at Shake Parade. It's a really great place here in San Francisco, and we have a keynote by Susie Bright, who will talk about like the disappearance of sexual spaces in the public spaces, so that you see less and less public erotic displays, for example, in the United States of America. But we also have talks about sex in outer space. For example, Spaceman Sam, who is a really good friend of mine, he will talk about sex in space on Friday night. The interesting aspect is that there is a slight chance that there already was sex in outer space, but nobody actually wants to talk about that. NASA is not talking about it at all. There is not even like a clear statement about if there happened something like masturbation in a space station or something like that. But Spaceman Sam is part of a private group who wants to send people to space, and he's really interested in sex and sex space tourism and stuff like that. So he will give an interesting talk and perspective about how sex in outer space could actually work. And for example, on Saturday, that's the official, like, the whole day we have talks on Saturday. It's our, like, conference for brainy perverts. And we have talks, for example, about stuff like the interspecies romance in the Mass Effect computer game series and stuff like that. So we have a pretty diverse like array of talks about sex, technology, and space. Yeah.
Johannes, what was the primary idea to start with this conference? Was it just an idea popped up in your head and let's think about a conference about combining electronics and sex, or is it more like there were multiple people who were having just a very nice conference with their cells and thought, hey, we should share this with other people?
Okay, so the conference is now in its fourth year, so we're doing it the fourth time, and we always have a specific, except like sex and technology, we always have a specific theme. And the whole conference started because I'm part of Monochrome, and Monochrome is an art and technology collective from Vienna in Austria, and we are kind of the organizers of Ars Electronica. And our basic question was, because there's all this like, you know, like small talk about how technology was influenced and stimulated by pornography and sex. And we kind of wanted to know if that's true. Is broadband internet really out there only because the porn consumers wanted to have faster access to porn? And is the VHS tape only because of the porn market, the dominant videotaping format of the 1980s? Like questions like that. Many, many people talk about that in small talk, but there is no, there was no conference or no combined effort to discuss like the interesting concept of pornography and technological innovation and how pornography stimulated technological innovation. And that's why we created the first Ars Electronica, because we really wanted to know, is it true? And we invited historians and people from the tech industry and philosophers, a quite interesting array of different people from different fields. And we asked the question, is it true? And in fact, yes, it is true. The first things that were printed by Gutenberg on his printing press, with his printing press, were not only the Bible, but he also printed erotica. And he was kind of like financing printing more Bibles with also printing smut. And the first Polaroid camera that came out in the 1950s, 1960s, it was called the Swinger, of course, because there was a hidden DIY amateur porn market out there. Because people didn't want to make their amateur porn photos at home and bring it to the processing company, because they, of course, didn't want the people at the processing company to see their amateur porn in the 1950s and 60s, you can imagine. And there is lots and lots of connections between that. Broadband internet in that form would not exist without the porn market being driven by consumers who wanted to download porn at home. Stuff like that. It's just like name a technology, see you, see me, video chatting, whatever. There is always a strong aspect of sex and pornography connected to that.
If you're going to take a look on the technologies who are stimulated by, nice word in this case, by the way, stimulated by pornography, you already mentioned the VHS, but nowadays techniques like Blu-ray or HD DVD, do you think those techniques are also still...
Oh yes. The Blu-ray standard is pretty much out there because the Japanese porn market wanted it. Yeah, pretty much.
So
yeah. Just like Google for Blu-ray and Japanese porn markets.
Hey, we got some other people here on the table. Hey guys, why are we not at Ars Electronics? Or Ars, is it actually?
It's I'm actually not sure how to really pronounce it, because if you're a British guy, you would probably say something like Ars Electronica, and the Americans would say like Ars or something. I don't know.
Ars.
Ars. Yeah.
Sorry, why are you not there?
I don't know. I cannot hear myself.
Hey.
Yeah, there's some technological problems out there. Yeah, that's nice.
Somebody's working with his Ars probably.
Yeah.
Hey, Ioannis, how many people are going to join the conference?
So, I mean, in total, we have around, I would say, like 30, 35 people giving talks, doing presentations, having performances. But how many people actually will show up, I don't know. The good thing is the conference is partially financed by the Austrian Cultural Funding. We got a little bit of money from Austria to make a perversion conference in San Francisco. I kind of like that. Austria, thank you very much. But I still hope that lots of people will show up and actually pay the entry fee, and so we don't like end up having that here. But I think that shouldn't be a big problem.
And what's going
general, to... In general, just like an invitation, because I know a couple of people might hear that who are in San Francisco. Please show up. It's a really great... conference, and we have it in four different locations, because we not only want to attract like the hacker community, but also like the sex positive community. So we will have one day at the hackerspace Noisebridge, where we are talking about all the tinkering aspects of like building your own stuff, DIY sex toys and stuff like that. But we'll also have one evening at the Center for Sex and Culture, which is more interested in the sex positive and sex sex tutorials, and sex workers go there and stuff like that. So we not only want to focus on like the pure hacker community scene, because the whole concept is so interesting. So many people from the hacker scene don't know anything about the sex positive community, and so many people in the sex positive community don't know actually what really interesting crazy shit is going on in hacker spaces. So we try to combine many, many different fields and scenes and people from who have different perspectives on the subject.
Hey, and Ioannis, what's going to happen off the record? Is there a hidden agenda?
I mean, is there a hidden agenda? I don't know. The hidden agenda is, of course, to have a certain amount of fun. That's always good. I mean, there's stuff you just actually can't plan. At the first Ars Electronica in 2007, we had a guest, a really interesting guest. It was Fuckzilla, and Fuckzilla was and still is a fucking machine, and created by Kink. And we had it there. We just presented it. It's a giant machine that looks like the 1980s robot Johnny Five. You probably know Johnny Five. And the only difference between Johnny Five and Fuckzilla is that Fuckzilla has a licking chainsaw and a giant dildo. And he can bring pleasure to men and women or whatever gender you have. So we had the machine there, and I was kind of joking and asking, is anyone interested in trying the machine? And because we're in San Francisco, like some person, really, like a 20-year-old girl, raised her hand and said, yes, I want to fuck Fuckzilla on stage right now. I'm into that. And then I saw a young feminist girl having sex with the crazy Fuckzilla machine on stage, and for the first time ever in my life, I saw female ejaculation for like, I don't know, like 4 meters or something like that. Yeah, and it was recorded. It's on tape. It's not on YouTube because they flagged it immediately. It's somewhere on YouPorn.
You should bring us a copy.
Go on YouPorn. Go to YouPorn and look for Fuckzilla and Ars Electronica, and you'll find it. It's out there. Yeah, and I mean, you can't plan that. Stuff like that just happens, and I hope. I've seen my fair share of sex fucking already at Ars Electronica, but I hope I'll see more of it, and not only because of my obviously sexually stimulated male gaze tech fetish I have, but I don't know.
Hey, Johannes, you're over there at Noisebridge, and Noisebridge is also famous of a lot of makers over there. One of the famous makers, Mitch Altman, is he also going to join Ars Electronics?
Yeah, I hope so. Mitch is not yet in town. He is somewhere.
He's stuck in London, I saw.
He's anywhere all the time, like turning off TV sets, you know. And I hope he will be there because I think he would very much enjoy. I think he will arrive on Saturday or Sunday, something like that, perfectly on time for going to see our Screwed Yourself workshops at Noisebridge. Yeah.
I really hope he's not going to turn off your TV with your nice porn on it.
I mean, you know, it's hard to turn on my notebook. I don't even own a TV.
Hey, to finish, what's the reason why people should come to Ars Electronics? Main reason, one word.
Main reason, one line. Let's say one line.
Okay, one line.
The human species is a sexual species and a tool-using species. That's the two dominant factors of our existence, sex and tools. And because we are into sex and we're into tools, you should check out what we can offer for you.
I see Psychic over here with very big eyes, and he's watching your movie now. Tell me what you're seeing.
I see the Johnny Five machine thing basically flapping. Yeah, parts of the human body that are not intended for flapping. Well, not by machines, actually. Shoving big things into holes that cannot take that much in them big shoves.
Is there no sound with it?
There is sound with it, but I can't. Don't know if I can.
Come on.
Hang on.
All you listeners out there, just like, you know, Google for the stuff. Google it. Check it out at home. It's way more interesting.
We got a repeat of the stream.
That's myself. I can hear myself announcing.
Shut up. So this is actually the fucking machine in action. The Fuckzilla.
If this is not going to make us explicit on iTunes, I don't know. I don't understand it anymore.
There's no porn in this one. It's just a girl in the corner with doing some weird stuff with herself and basically shouting and crying and doing.
There are many videos because kink.com is a porn producing company, and they created They actually paid the same guy who created Johnny Five in the 1980s to create the fucking machine. So it's built by the same guy who made Johnny Five. And that's the interesting thing. The cool thing about fucking machines is, of course, especially in the nerd community, there's so many men. Of course, they all consume porn. It's quite obvious. But the interesting thing is, more and more women out there use fucking machines and build their own fucking machines. There's a whole interesting aspect of third wave feminism of women who say, come on, I don't need a man. I can have my own fucking machine, or I can even build it for myself. I can custom make it for my own needs, and it's really cool. And so it's not only this, like, a couple of nerds are wanking off seeing fucking machines. There's so many women out there and girls who are interested in that topic, especially because they can build it for themselves. It's so really great.
Johannes, if people want to build their own fucking machine, just come to Ars Electronica.
You will tell them
how to do.
I'm happy to, yeah.
Hey, Johannes, thank you very much for joining us here in the show. And I'm looking forward to some of the movies. I only heard the sound. And see you soon, man.
Okay, it was a pleasure having you.
Welcome back to Signal, your favorite Hackerspaces radio station. We promised something to do a wrap-up of the Brucon conference last weekend in Brussels. I was there, and GMC was also there, and I think we had a lot of fun. Brainsmoke was also there.
Yeah.
And
Psychic, he was also there.
Psychic also was there. The only guy who wasn't there was Yuri.
I wasn't there.
He wasn't there. also, Chris John Riley was there, and Chris did a very awesome job for us. He visited probably all the talks, isn't it? Chris.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, you were breaking up for a moment there. I thought I was going to lose you.
It's always the damn Skype. Hey, how are you doing, Chris?
Oh, you know, as I was saying in the break there, I'm just starting to recover now. My liver has stopped screaming at me, and
the second name of Brucon is actually Beercon, isn't it?
Beercon. Yes.
Hacking for beer.
Or was it? Or was it the cheese?
No, it was mostly the beer. The cheese is still in the fridge.
Ah, that's good. It's in the fridge.
In his own fridge.
Yeah.
In my own fridge.
Thanks for making the picture for the paper, so we're real sure that it was somewhere in Austria. For people who doesn't know the cheese story, can you give them a hint?
You want the full story?
No. You just forgot the cheese in Vienna. You got a new cheese in Brussels now.
Yeah, because someone else stole my cheese from the... Yeah.
Hey, Chris, back to Brewcon. You saw a lot of talks at Brewcon.
Yeah, I did.
And what talks were particularly very good?
Wow, yeah, I mean, Brewcon was great. I mean, Brewcon last year was really, really good, but this year it was, I think it was even better than it was last year. There was some really... It's hard to kind of single it out and say this one talk was brilliant and all the rest were okay, because pretty much 50% of the talks I saw were just mind-blowingly good. I think the one that really stands out for me was obviously Chris Nickerson talking about destroying companies, which was fun, if not a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
Did you see that one? Or?
Well, actually, I was a lot in the Hardhack Village because lots of people were showing interest of microcontrollers. And it was also good to hang out with Mitch Altman to have some good chats about also so our Japan tour and other stuff about electronics and so on. Did you saw Mitch's talk, by the way?
I didn't. That's the one I missed. But I did see him give his short version of a talk at NinjaCon. So
you don't know his trick?
Which one was that?
Now, you know, Mitch is always traveling around the world and talking with hackers and learning people how to solder and so on. But he's always there. A big question, how does he do it? And Kuhn was actually very, very like, I need to know it.
Well, I told you the day before that his secret probably was that TVB Gone is really popular. And it turns out that is the secret. But I'm more interested in the talk because I saw this one. I didn't saw the one Chris just mentioned about destroying companies.
So what was Chris Nickerson destroying? Companies?
I think the message that Chris was trying to get across in a very theatrical way was that penetration testers and people doing security audits just aren't talking the language of the business. The key point that he started off trying to make was that if you stand in front of an executive of a company and say, look, we got shell on your server, you know, most executives are going to look at you blankly and say, okay, well, what does that do? You know, great, you've got a small black screen that apparently connects to our server. Am I meant to suddenly start freaking out or, you know, throw $500,000 at the problem? And he was trying to convince people or trying to explain to people who do penetration testing that you need to convey business risk. And sometimes that's all about, you know, not necessarily actually destroying a company, but being able to say, you know, because of these issues, we can, you know, dump your customer database, you know, and that alone isn't a big issue. But if we then leak your customer database to the press or, you know, start doing malicious stuff like that, what's that going to do to your reputation of your company? And then the business start to truly understand that that shell that you've got is more than just a small black screen with a flashing cursor. That spells possibly the end of their company or the end of their careers. So he was doing it very theatrically, you know, things like burning places down, poisoning employees, things like that. But I think the message he was trying to convey was mostly that we're just not talking the language of business.
Yeah, that's very – I can recognize that. He was also mentioning that in the podcasters meetup, that
yeah.
We security people, we have a lot to learn, and we need to learn to talk to the real people and the people who are going to make the decisions and so on. You recognize that in a lot of things?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing he was trying to put across, and I agree perfectly, is that we, as an industry, InfoSec is very good at saying, well, the business just aren't doing it right. But that's not the case. You know, it's us. We're not doing it right. You know, we're not explaining things right. We're not explaining things clearly enough. And if we show them that we can do something or that something's insecure and they don't understand, it's not because they're stupid. It's because we're just not speaking the right language and not explaining it clearly enough. So I think it's us who needs to change, not the business. and I think Chris put that across quite well. Obviously, there was a few people who thought his message was a little bit too extreme, but I think you really had to kind of make it extreme to kind of put the message across.
If you're going to take a look at other presentations, do you saw other presenters also bringing this message, or?
I've seen an increase in that kind of message over the last year or so, and I think that's a good thing. Things like goal-orientated penetration testing, where you're trying to match the goals of your penetration testing to the goals of the business, instead of just kind of, okay, well, we're going to attack your website and see what happens. You know, it's like kind of, this is a specific goal because this is really important for the company that people don't get access to this data or that people don't denial of service our site. So kind of customizing your penetration testing to the business. And I think that's a good trend. I think that's something that we can add quality to our penetration tests and really make things more secure from a business standpoint instead of just giving these reports that no one ever reads. We do a test, they tick a box to say this had a penetration test, and they throw a report in a drawer and they never bother looking at it. And if we can really convey that it's business risk, then maybe people are going to start looking at these things more seriously and fixing them.
Hey, and any other presentations where you say that, okay, this is one of those presentations you don't forget?
Other presentations at BrewCon. Dale Pearson, one of my co-hosts on the Eurotrash Security Podcast, did a great presentation on head hacking.
Craig Balding.
Craig did a presentation on Skylab.
Project Skylab one.
Project Skylab, which was also really really good. Actually, I think I was the only one who didn't really do a good presentation from Eurotrash. But I did dress as a pimp. So
yeah,
I'm sure that wins
convincingly. Yeah.
Where was the presentation on about?
Dale's presentation was is talking about social engineering, using things like mysticism, hypnotism, and things like that, and trying to kind of convey that it's not just all about lying, and really kind of bringing some science to the whole process, because his description of things were, you know, you've got varying, I think he said there was 5 different types of people who do social engineering, and there was the opportunist and things like that, and his goal was to kind of become this master guru of social engineering. He was kind of explaining the plus and minus points of each type, and it talked quite at length about the history of things like hypnotism and things like that, and how they can help people. He also did a really good trick with the crowd, which is it's a bit hard to talk about on a podcast. So if you can watch the video, then it's good. I think he got about 50% of the crowd to pick a specific letter in a word, purely by giving subtle prompts that most people would never really have understood what those prompts were. And we talked a bit about it after his presentation, and I kind of started to understand how he did it. And it's amazing how he does it.
It's just a trick?
It's just a trick when you do it for a crowd. Like, wow, look, I made you pick the right letter. But using that in social engineering is like, well, you're giving someone a choice, but you're subtly leaning them towards picking the one that you want. Just things like the way you phrase things, like you turn up and the security guard asks you for your pass, and you say, well, I forgot my pass. I'm really sorry. You don't have to let me in.
Mm-hmm.
But by saying the phrase, let me in, it suddenly becomes in their mind, well, yeah, I could let them in.
Yeah, you just reprogram them.
But this is actually interesting. I was looking for some books actually about this subject, so I thought, well, let's check Kevin Mitnick's book,
The Art of
but
Deception.
But he doesn't really go The Art of Deception. He doesn't really go into these what you say, the scientific side of it, like the psychological. How does the brain process language? How does the subconscious work? And so. Actually, pity that I missed this presentation, because this is really interesting.
The presentations of BrewCon, they are recorded on video. They will come.
They were editing them yesterday in Hackerspace in Antwerp, I think. So they will be released.
If you're going to take a look on this subject, by the way, you see that lots of IT security specialists and so on also do something with social engineering. Chris, do you think this is because social engineering is just an extension of our firewalls and techniques and websites and so on?
I think the
why the combination
been a big move. Yeah, it's been a big move over the last couple of years to working more towards client-side exploitation, you can see how the increase in security, I mean, it's not often nowadays that you're doing a pen test on a website and you've got a remote exploit on the Apache or the IIS box. You've got to take it up that level, and it's gone to web applications and it's gone to client-side, and now it's going to the actual user itself. And sometimes it's just so much simpler. We're big companies who have invested millions and millions of dollars in huge firewalls and IDSs and things like that. You can just walk up to the secretary and say, oh, can you just please save this data to this USB key for me? You know, you're bypassing their entire security because you're simply going to a person who does have access to it or does have the ability to give you access to it and just asking them for things. And sometimes people just don't think that you would walk up to them and just simply lie and, you know, or deceive them and say, yeah, sure, I'm meant to have this.
Did you also saw the presentation of Joseph McRae about you spent all that money and you still got owned?
I saw that one at DEF CON. So I really liked his presentation.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an interesting look at kind of like SQL injection stuff and a number of other kind of interesting commands. And it's interesting the way he does things. I like Joe's presentations. He's a funny guy as well.
It was not on the social engineering side because you were mentioning companies are spending lots of money on IPSs, IDSs, firewalls, etc. But social engineering is still one of those leaks.
Joe's presentation was more along the lines of how IDSs and things still have quite a long way to go before they can protect against things. So, I mean, people who use the technical approach to hack systems certainly aren't out of business, but social engineering has become, you know, a big alternative to the actual electronic approach.
Hey, there are also some other activities than the standard talks and presentations and so on. I saw also some workshops. You saw the beer workshop?
I missed that one. I was too busy drinking beer, probably.
Yeah, you had your own beer workshop.
Yeah, we had our own beer workshop.
At the bar.
Did you see at the after party the tactical nuclear penguin?
No.
Or did you miss that one?
It's well, there 30%. Was,
32% alcohol.
Yeah, what
100 euros a bottle.
What was a bottle? 100 euros a bottle.
It was 100 euro, 99 euros 50 for a bottle.
Oh my god. So, it was really strong stuff.
It tasted like tar. It was disgusting.
Well, it's at least good for your dentist.
Yeah, good. You get black teeth. Yeah.
Hey, you're also doing PowerPoint karaoke.
I wasn't actually doing it, but I did get called up on stage to don the pimp suit and say a couple of lines.
Did you miss that one?
Sorry?
Did you miss the PowerPoint karaoke?
I just about called it. I liked Paul Asadorian's PowerPoint karaoke. Did you catch that one?
Yeah, I was working at the bar at the moment, so I could view the entire presentation. I especially liked the stuff about how to deceive your girlfriend into having...
I think the title was Honey, I Would Like to Have a Threesome.
Yeah, that one, and also about the Lolita clothing. The Japanese girls. That was a classic. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it How I Met Your Girlfriend?
Yeah, that one. No, that's
on Saturday.
That's the actual talk. No, it was at the PowerPoint karaoke where some guy would actually try to convince his girlfriend into getting a threesome and how you should approach that and how you should do that. So,
I wanted to ask, did you see the How I Met Your Girlfriend one, Chris?
I didn't because I missed it. I didn't actually know they were doing it.
You were calling with your girlfriend, or?
Yeah. I was in another talk, and I didn't realize Sammy was giving the presentation, so I kind of got distracted and was talking to people about various things, and then suddenly I realized I'd missed the presentation. So that's the way things are, though, with BrewCon, is that there's so many fun things to do, and you want to use the time to socialize with others and things like that, and then by doing that, sometimes you miss things, so...
And it's a really charming conference as well. I mean, it's not too big. I believe we had 400 people in there this time.
And I'm not sure if it was the max, but the max was 400. Yeah.
I know they practically sold out. So yeah. And I mean, they want to keep it this small as well. And I think that's a good thing because it gives you a chance to actually meet everyone and walk around and.
Yeah, and you will get the motivated people because they will buy a ticket in advance. Same as at Hacking at Random. They were sold out, But the good thing is that all the people who really wanted to come, they already bought a ticket.
Yeah, definitely.
So, talking about the atmosphere at Brucon, I think they really found a nice combination about combining hard hacking, security, social engineering, but also combining it with lots of fun things like the beer workshop, PowerPoint karaoke, some nice lightning talks, by the way. The total setup is a kind of unique, but it's also very easy to hang around. And you were at the hardware hacking village, Koen?
Yeah, I've been there a lot, actually. I might say Brainsmoke and Psychic as well, actually. And they actually did some real soldering. What did you build, Psychic, TV Be Gone?
TV Be Gone. I got lessons from Mitch himself how to solder, because I am actually a noob at soldering. I'd done it, I think, twice in my life, and Mitch was gladly wanted to help me with some soldering stuff. And I actually made a working TV Be Gone, which I was very proud of myself. So.
And you got a patch?
I got a patch, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
and Brainsmoke. You also did some soldering. You built an Arduino, actually, right?
Well, an Arduino clone, the Otan Toto clone, which is very nice if you want to build a robot.
That was supplied by the hardhack.org guys, girls.
From Fabien.
Yeah, Fabien, yeah.
You also got some servos with it, so we're going to build ourselves a robot or something.
Like the walking spider thingy with the 6 lines of code.
Yeah.
Chris is probably thinking about, I was at the Hardwork Village, but it didn't do anything.
I don't know. I saw the walking spider. So I was looking for an Arduino kit, but after talking to a few people, I figured out it didn't quite do exactly what I was looking for it to do. So
what are you looking for?
It was one of those kind of. I was looking for a crazy idea of getting an Arduino kit running with two network interfaces and using it for man-in-the-middling printer connections.
Man-in-the-middle, I should almost think like Ars Electronics, where you just had the interview with...
That's some other thing in the middle.
You heard the interview with our guys from Ars Electronics?
I didn't. I missed that one. I'm going to have to catch it on the replay. So.
But Johannes Grenzfuhrer, you know him?
Yeah.
He's organizing Ars Electronics in the States. And it's all about sex and electronics, so that's the reason Men in the Middle.
Such a good combination. I saw his... they gave a Night Talks presentation at CCC last year where they were talking about sexuality.
Yeah. It was in the same C-base. In the same direction, only this is a full conference about that subject.
in San Francisco, is that?
Yeah, Noise Bridge.
Yep.
So no.
One day I'll make it there.
No hardware hacking for you at Brucon.
Not this time. My hardware hacking skills are pretty bad. I mean, a perfect example: when I got back from Brucon, I tried to put an antenna together for my Proxmark RFID kit, and then managed to break the cable just by stripping it to try and make an antenna, which is it's just full of fail.
Okay, maybe hardware is not your thing, but the podcasters meetup was actually a bit the kind of your thing.
Yeah, that one actually worked quite well. I mean, I've been part of... This is the third podcasters meetup I've been part of. I did ShmooCon last January, which turned into... Yeah, turned into a bit of a chaotic event with keg stands and people throwing things and things like that. And then we did one at DEF CON last month, and that was... Yeah, there were some problems with audio and things like that. I don't even think the audio for that one made it out. So we're pretty happy to actually get the audio for this one recorded and out. And I'd like to thank you guys for the help with that, because you did a brilliant job. You know, I've never seen so many microphones in one place at one time.
Well,
me neither.
And working.
And working, yeah. With so many different colors and everything. So.
Which color were you?
I was kind of running around in the crowd.
Oh, so you had the yellow wireless mic.
I had one of the wireless mics. Yeah. So, because the whole point of the podcasters meetup was no point in having all the podcasters sitting on stage talking like they would normally on a podcast, because you know what is the interest in that for people in the crowd? The whole point of the podcasters meetup was really to kind of interact with the crowd, get the crowd's opinion on things. And there were some really good discussions that started. And I think we didn't quite cover everything we wanted to cover. We had kind of like a set, two or three things.
That you were late.
We kind of ran to 1 hour 20 minutes or something in the end, or 1 hour 15 minutes. So you just can't fit everything in. And there's some good points there that came up, and I think we should probably get a few people together on a podcast at a later date and really talk about it. But we started to talk a little bit about, you know, how developers, you know, what we can do to kind of make developers interested in security, and I think that was an interesting discussion. So
let's save some discussions for Brucon and have a small pause with some music. What kind of music do you have, by the way?
Yeah, it's good that you ask. Point is, I forgot to announce the song, so I will do that now. The first song we had was by the Hi-Fi Hustlers. It was called Power Version. We're actually going a bit funky, jazzy, loungy today. The second song was by a band named Kif-On. It's the song Jet Set. And the song that I'm now going to play is called Fiesta Flamenca in da Funk by Falsa Moneda.
Saca pa' decir, sin vestirme por los pies, bajé al bar del tío Andrés, sin tomarme ni un café, un carajillo y un jerez, solo soy detrás de mí, solo soy detrás de mí. Pero qué bueno que viniste. Fiesta flamenca de pan. Fiesta flamenca de pan. Fiesta flamenca de pan. Fiesta flamenca de pan. ¿Cómo me li otra vez? Ya estoy otra vez liado. Que me había encontrado, como yo no lo iba a hacer. Esto se plantea bien, castañoso por Madrid. Terapia no es para mí, lo antes me quiero salir.
Welcome back to Signal, your favorite the radio station for hackerspaces. On the line we got Christian Riley. Chris?
Chris? I'm still here.
Chris is still there. Hey, to do a small wrap-up, one thing of Brucon you remember, like, that's the thing for of Brucon 2010. Was it the cheese?
Wow. Yeah, it's got to be between the cheese and walking out to do my lightning talk wearing a purple pimp suit.
What was the story behind that, by the way?
I can't even remember anymore, realistically. Apparently it came from a discussion I had on Twitter with Frank Bridgick, Secubus on Twitter. Yeah. Apparently I said that I'd do the talk dressed as a pimp. And so he took me to my word and rented a suit for me, so I didn't have a choice.
Sounds good. Hey, the other guys over there, Psyche.
My summary about Brucon?
Yeah.
The one thing you remember most.
Being wasted. from Thursday evening to Saturday evening after the after party and when we fell asleep around late somewhere. So that was great.
Hey, Brainspot?
Talking to people and also the final delirium tremens we took at the after party. We were
I don't remember any of that.
No.
Hey, and Koen, what was your focus on Brucon?
Yeah, mostly meeting people, meeting new people, meeting old friends. It was just great. It was the second edition, and I'll definitely be going to the third edition.
Well, for me, what was also an awesome Brucon. Never learned that much people know who wanted to learn Arduino. Hey, Chris, thank you for joining in studio over here by remote Skype. And, well,
always
probably
happy.
Probably talk to you soon somewhere in Signal.
No problem.
Hey,
keep up the good work, guys.
We will do. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Signal, your favorite radio station for hackerspaces. This is the Dev Random Show. One of the things on the agenda, 15th of October and 16th of October, is the synchronous hackathons. And on the line we got Rob Fitzsimmons. Am I saying it right, Rob?
Yeah, I usually go by Robert, but yeah, Rob Fitz.
How are you doing, Rob?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. What's going to happen, and for the people who are listening and don't know the synchronous hackathons, what's it?
Well, it was something that started almost a year ago now, and the general idea is that have one weekend each month where hopefully a number of hackerspaces would be online and have their space open so that their members could go in and work on projects and interact, but at the same time interact with other hackerspaces. So it was kind of a bit like the phrase being hackathon, that you would try and maybe have somebody in there most of the day or all night. For some of the hackers, I guess some of the other hackerspaces don't have people there late in the evening or very regularly. At least we didn't initially in our hackerspace in Dublin and TOG. So it's become a focus for us, and we'll get people in there from, we usually start at 12 o'clock in the afternoon and go through till late in the evening with people coming in and working on their projects.
Is there a certain list of hackerspaces who are involved, Rob?
There's no limit. I would tend to try and announce that we're going to be going ahead a couple of days or a couple of weeks in advance, just to try and invite the other hackerspaces that are on the hackerspaces mailing list to participate. But it's very loose. There's no planned agenda. We kind of make it up as we go along. And usually we've been using Ustream to do kind of video streaming of our hackerspaces. You set up a camera in each space, so you can kind of see what other spaces are doing. Okay.
Sounds as a splendid idea, actually, for at least helping each other work to get working on it and motivate each other. That's one of the main reasons, I think, motivate each other just to go to the hackerspace and work on projects.
Yeah, that would be the main. I think the main focus for me that it what I find with talking with people who are new to the hackerspace concept is that they don't necessarily have time to work on a specific, they find it hard to juggle real life and hackerspace life. So if you kind of say, well, we're going to be here this full weekend, come in for an hour, come in for eight, and you can work on your own project or ask questions of people who are there. And then and throwing in the possibility of interacting with the other hackerspaces, it's probably the untapped aspect of the hackathons, I think. I think we could probably do some more work to try and share projects or set challenges across multiple hackerspaces. I think one of the first hackathons, I think we just kind of randomly decided, well, I'm going to do a demonstration on homebrew PCB fabrication, so etching PCBs. I think that worked quite well, and it's probably something I might try and we might try and do something again, maybe not this month, but I think next month for the kind of one-year anniversary, we might try something.
What's one of the Dutch hackerspaces actually involved with the hackathon? So do you know GMT?
A little bit. I think we talked more using the hackerspaces call-in than actually through the hackathon events.
Actually, at RevSpace, we aren't that organized. So for us, it's a bit inconvenient because getting everyone there and. But I've really thought about joining it. We've got plenty of projects that we could use a sprint on, and one of these hackathons would be a great motivation to actually get it moving.
Maybe we should just also clean up, or
let's not start that again.
that's also one of the problems we have at Random Data. Get continuous cleanup at least.
but Rob, can I ask? I mean, it's you don't actually have to sign into the wiki page to join the hackathon, right? I mean,
No. We tend to have people hanging out on the Hackerspaces IRC channel, and you don't even have to participate with other Hackerspaces. It's really trying to motivate your own. The members from each Hackerspace to come in and say, well, I'm going to be here. I'm going to have the place open for this period of time. And you can ask maybe new members, they can come by and work on their project. And it might just be that the girlfriend or the boyfriend is off playing football or something like that. And they just want to come in and spend an hour working on a project or in the city center. But yeah, if you just want to, you don't have to use the wiki page, and you don't have to use the video streaming technology. It's probably a local hackathon, but there's the possibility for international collaboration. I think it's probably the way to.
Can you some
general idea?
Can you mention some famous spaces who are going to join the hackathon? I know Pumping Station One in Chicago is one of the spaces who's joining usually.
Yeah, I think Pumping Station One are on regularly in terms of that. Let me bring up the favorite.
I was just looking. I mean, the first shows just a ton of hackerspaces. Alpha One Labs, Makers Local 256, Pumping Station One, Familab. Well, goes on Sintucat from Luxembourg, Barcelona. I mean, it's not just something. Restricted to one specific continent or region.
No, and that I think when the first kind of idea was that you kind of do 48 hours of each hackerspace kind of doing it almost in a relay, and I think that's where the possibility comes in. If we kind of set a challenge for the hackerspaces community to try and to complete over a weekend, or I guess the one of the things we have is that not everybody has a project they want to work on, and sometimes people come to the hackerspaces for inspiration. So if the hackerspace community was able to suggest an event or an activity for the weekend, I would love to see something like that you have. The Australian hackerspace kind of starts something, and then the European hackerspaces each hour kind of come in and get involved, and the US kind of finish up.
It's like follow the sun hacking.
Yeah, focusing on maybe a single project or a single idea, really taking the hackerspace, the hackathon idea, or maybe not so much a hackathon, but more like a sprint. Say we're going to develop something in this weekend, and it might be something to do with hacker spaces, it might be a website, it might be something like the Python or the programming competitions that some of the hacker spaces have done, like where they'll do a month of every day they will develop a program and put it up on their blogs or on their website.
Sounds interesting if you do a software project, because that's easy to transport during the follow the sun, of course.
I could imagine you could also do it with a hardware project. Well, you should. I mean, one space could each could do different parts of a hardware project,
yeah,
and then maybe
just development.
In between send them back and forth, and then the next hackathon you could pick up on the project again.
So you have a circle. Everybody works on one project for 1 week, and then send it on, and then
yeah, and then
the
it gets assembled.
Space
then,
has to
know.
Carry on and. Decide what to do with it,
yeah. And then we'll be synchronous hack a month or something like that.
yeah, or a year maybe. We could like build a spaceship or something, you know. Just
there is already one in Berlin.
True, yeah. It's actually 15 years old this year. Did you know?
I know. Mm-hmm. No. It was the celebration of something else, too, by the way.
Only problem might be sending around the spaceship, though.
Oh, well. Details. So Rob, to conclude, the last hackathon was, I think, September 18th at or about.
Yeah.
When is the next one up?
The next one is on the 15th and 16th of October, if I correct, yes.
So
the 15th and 16th of October.
2-3 weeks, yeah, two
mm-hmm.
weeks.
And we have it on the third weekend of each month.
Okay.
And where can people find the information of the Synchronauts Hackathons?
Yeah, it's the main kind of collaboration point is the Hackerspaces wiki under the Synchronauts Hackathon page, and then usually you can ask on the IRC channel, the Hackerspaces IRC channel, and people will be able to redirect you to the right page.
So, everybody at Hackerspaces,
mm-hmm.
just join the Synchronauts Hackathons.
Brilliant, yes, please do.
Hey, Rob, thank you very much for telling this information. I hope some other spaces are going to join. In the meanwhile, we're going to listen to some CC music. And what's on the list, Koen?
Did I mention that the song we listened before we got Rob on the line was by Neri Blaka and it was Huggy the Good Tips?
No, you didn't mention.
Well, I did now. We're now going to lounge a bit with the Sundayers, and the song is actually also called The Sundayers. It couldn't be any easier. that was not lounge at all, but it was nice music. Fish.
Yes, this is the Random Show, and we're going to talk about the Right to Know Day from the Wouldn't You Like to Know Foundation, and we try to say it in at least five times behind each other. Wouldn't You Like to Know Foundation? Would like to know, because it's actually Dutch, isn't it, Sebastian?
Yeah, it's Dutch. This is actually the first time that I heard anybody else to try to translate it to English.
Well, the reason why I was translating it is because most of the people who are listening there are English.
Yeah. because would you like to know? Wouldn't you like to know? Is a typical Dutch expression. That's why we chose this name for our foundation. It's like a saying that you say to someone. It's like, I'm not going to tell you.
Whoa! So you're not going to tell us where the day is all about?
Yeah. The Right to Know Day is the 28th of September, so that was 2 days ago. And the first time the Right to Know Day was organized was in 2003, so this was the eighth edition. And the first one was in Bulgaria. And this was the first time that we organized a day around the Right to Know, the Freedom of Information Act, in the Netherlands. Which is kind of strange, because the Netherlands was the seventh country in the world to have a law on the freedom of information. And this is the first time that we've organized a day around the freedom of information. So it's a good thing that there was a day devoted in the Netherlands too on this topic.
It wasn't just in the Netherlands though, was it?
No, I don't know. I don't really know in how many countries, but I think it's around it's more than three countries, I think. I have to excuse myself that I don't know in how many other countries there is a Right to Know Day. But it's spreading around the world.
And what was on the agenda? I see some very famous Dutch organizations who are supporting the Right to Know Foundation. For example, a Big Wobber, of course, Breno is there. Bits of Freedom is over there. I also see a foundation that says, "You would like to know?"
there are a lot of organizations. Also, a couple of organizations for journalists. That really support this idea, and journalists is one of the groups of people that really need this information to do their work. They need this information, they need the information of the government to inform other people. You know, the law in the Netherlands came to effect in 1980, and from the moment that the law came to effect, we, the people, so the inhabitants of the Netherlands, are the owner of all the data and information that our government registers. And we need this information to see if our government is doing the right things. And this law is the method to get the information that's not free on forehand. A lot of people don't know about this. So a lot of people don't know that they have the right on the information, that they can get to this information, but also that they have the plight to check on the government if they are doing the right thing and that they are able to do so. That's why a lot of organizations, a couple you've already mentioned, but also politicians and political parties are supporting this day.
I saw some people of some famous Dutch parties, yes. For my information, because I don't know the total concept, is it more to tell people about information or is it more to discuss about that information?
I think both. One of the goals is to create more consciousness, and consciousness on a very broad level. Everybody in the Netherlands should be more conscious, to my opinion. It's a personal opinion that I'm telling over here, and that's also the reason that I'm involved in this. So in my opinion, more people should be conscious of the right they have on information, but also the plight they have to check if their government, may it be local or their province or national, what they are doing. But it's also where to set the borders of the information. During the evening, there was a very interesting debate that we didn't have time for really to talk a lot about it. If I have the time to give an example,
You have?
Yeah. Well, the debate was on farmers. One of our guests was Stefan de Koning, and he built a map where you can see where some diseases of animals were spreading. And you could check it on the address of the farmer. One of the persons in the public she had the opinion that this way you could see which farmer was affected by the disease, which farmer, his animals had this disease, so people could track him to his door address. And if this was a good thing or not a good thing. From the point of view of the farmer, it's not a good thing, because people, you know, maybe they wanted to threat them that they didn't treat their animals right. But for people that like to walk around, it's a good thing, because they know that they have to avoid this farm. So the freedom of information works both ways. And it's very difficult to set the borders, which information you're going to give free and which information you're not going to give free. And that's a debate that we really have to activate more in the Netherlands, I think, around the world.
This is not only a Dutch problem. This is also an international problem, in my opinion. In my opinion, people should ask more about information and rights. Because if you don't know the information and you're not discussing the rights you have or you could have, then you never know what's going to happen or what rights you have.
Yeah, or what possibilities you have to influence the processes of policy making and decision making.
Hey, about this day, this day was now organized for once, or is it going to happen more often in the Netherlands, I mean?
Yeah, this was the first time it was organized. I think there were around 50 people. That's not too much. That's not a lot, actually. And we already have decided that we are going to organize the Right to Know Day in 2011.
Sounds good. Sounds good. And international organized Right to Know Days? Are you involved with those, or should people just check out the website?
We didn't have time to really get in contact with the other Right to Know Days, but I think that's inevitable for the next one, to really use the network that's there international, because there's a lot of information online too. But people can just look up the website. It's very easy. It's righttoknow.nl.
Okay.
And they can also check on the website of Brenno, which is bigwobber.nl. Both websites have the same information.
Okay. I really would like to thank you for your information. I think it's very interesting. I think it's good. It's good happening all around the world, and should happen more often. And probably talk to you later. And thanks again.
Well, you're welcome. Have a good night.
A Simple Life by Tom Fahey. It's all Creative Commons, the music. We forgot to mention, actually, there were two awards awarded at the Right to Know Day in Holland. One was the Obstructor, which went to the Ministry of Economic Affairs, because they didn't want... They gave insight to... They helped people write programs for the elections, and they didn't want to tell which parties they helped and which they didn't. The most transparent public servant, was the second award, and it went to Mr. De Jong. He's from the police, and he made an SMS service for incidents, for newsworthy items for the press. So, Fish, what's up next?
Well, we were talking about Brucon during this Dev Grinder show, and one of the things on Brucon was the Hex Factor. And, well, I always have to think a little bit like the X Factor for hackers. We got Peter Donyeau on the line. Peter.
Hey, Barry. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you very much for asking. The Hex Factor was a very, very good addition this time on Brucon, I heard.
Yes, it actually was. I mean, the first day was a little bit calm. People were like not really daring to participate. But on the second day, I think we had over about 15 to 20 teams playing on the game. So it was really, really fun.
And the Hex Factor was this year. It was separated in a few phases or a few hacks. Can you already tell a little bit about it? Because I also heard that the Hex Factor is still going on.
Yes. Well, let me get you back to the whole beginning where it all started. I mean, when you put up five people in the bar deciding to go for Brucon for the 2009 edition, we actually had to make some kind of a capture the flag game. And when running on one of the popular conferences, I always felt like, hey, those are a bunch of elite guys sitting there playing capture the flag things, and it's not really accessible for everyone. So the idea we had with the Hex Factor was actually creating challenges in different areas, from reverse engineering to pen testing to some very, very crazy shit, and to also make difficulties in those challenges. So you have a level 100, which could be solved by anyone up to my grandma, and the level 300s, which most of them weren't even solved during the edition of Brucon.
So what you're saying, it's the Hex Factor is a multi-hacking challenge.
Yes, and it's hacking not in always breaking into boxes, but it's really trying to use the technology you find on the internet, trying to use your brain and think out of the box, kind of a challenges.
Hey Peter, you're one of the guys who's involved with the Hex Factor. Who are the other hackers who are creating this good challenge?
Well, it depends from year to year, because last year in our first edition, I selected about six or seven guys that I know personally, and one of them is the crazy Didier Stevens, who always ends up with the amazing complex challenges. But because last year we spent a lot of hours on developing the stuff, this year I expanded the team to about 10 people, and we have like some colleagues of mine. But we also have Wim Remes from Eurotrash. We have Didier again. So it's basically all local Belgium researchers, security people who try to contribute to the Hex Factor.
Sounds awesome. The Hex Factor, you were mentioning it. It started at Brucon 2009. And what happened during Brucon 2009 and Brucon 2010? I also heard you were visiting Sands London, was it?
Yeah. Yes, because we realized, I think this year we spent over than 400 hours of time to develop the whole thing. And we realized after playing it 2 days on Brucon that it's kind of a waste of spending 400 hours to then just run the game for 48 hours and that's it. So I spoke with some people at Sands, and they were interested to run also the challenge on their conferences, on their big conferences. So last year we played it at Sands London. It was a little bit the same success as on Brucon. We had a little bit more international players there. And yeah, and this year it's scheduled again for London in December.
Good developments, in my opinion. The Hex Factor, if you're going to compare 2009 to 2010, is there a lot of difference in developments? Okay, you were mentioning there are more people working on it. Does it also is it also more complex and more difficult?
The only thing which we reused of last year was basically the scoring interface. Everything else is thought through in a bar with some beers. Some very creative things come up, and every year we completely start from the scratch and try to make something new. Try to put something in it which hasn't been there in the year before.
So it's a different. Total different Hex Factor.
Hey, it is completely different.
And is are people are still able to run the game?
Sorry?
Is it still possible to do the game, or is it only on live events like Sans or Brucon?
That's something which we are discussing right now, because I hear a lot of comments of people after the conference who say, hey, we want to continue playing at home. And we want to practice this stuff at home, because some of the challenges are really well taught, and you need at least a few hours to get through them. And not everybody has the time to do that on a conference, because some people come there to watch talks. So we are still considering whether we will put up a whole live event somewhere in March next year, maybe with Paul.com, we're not sure yet. Or maybe we'll just give the virtual machines and everything we have and put it somewhere online so that you can run your own game.
Sounds also good. I'm looking forward to that. Hey, I really would like to thank you for giving us some information about the Hex Factor. If people want to know some information about the Hex Factor, where can they find that information?
We have website www.hexfactor.org, where you can see on which conferences we are running, what the top 10 were of the previous conferences. And also very interesting is our blog on blog.hexfactor.org, where you can basically see the solutions of last year. So we always keep the solutions 1 year private. And after we have run through all our conferences, then we put the solutions online. So for 2010, that will probably be March, April, somewhere next year when we start developing the 2011 version.
Sounds good. Hey, thank you very much for joining.
Okay, thank you very much for having me, Barry.
Yeah, no problem, and I'll see you at the next conference, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, bye. Thanks, bye-bye. Well, that was the X Factor. We're going to switch over later on to Security for All, Benny Kateslakers, about the wrap up of Brucon. I'm really wondering what his ideas are about Brucon.
I really wonder if he's actually out of his coma already.
Well, I saw him on Skype, so we should be awake.
Okay.
In the meanwhile,
I've got some cyber threat set up. The song is called White House.
Come to America.
This is the Dev Random Show at Signal. We are talking about Brucon, and one of the main organizers, Benny Keteslegers, Security for All, is on the line. And I actually want to ask him, how was your Brucon, Benny? Benny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Ah, he's there.
Hey, we tried
the
again.
The line is a little bit unstable, I have the impression, but go ahead.
It's flaky. Hey, Benny, how was your Brucon?
Very, very tiring.
Yeah, what was it, the beer?
No. I didn't drink anything until the conference was over, except loads of Club Mate.
Open Mate. Yeah, that's a joke, because Club Mate is a brand and Open Mate is the open source Club Mate.
Yeah, I saw that people are trying to make their own mate, which is cool.
Hey, to Brucon is taking lots of energy of your daily program. If you're going to take a look on Brucon 2010 and compare it to 2009, is there a huge difference in organizing Brucon 2010, because it's the second conference?
Well, we focused a little bit on the details. The first year was really a beta test for us, and actually everything went okay, but we were a little bit understaffed. So this year it was better prepared, better organized, and it's good that we did, because I think we had a 50% increase about the maximum capacity of the venue that we have, and I think it's the right size for a real friendly conference.
How many people joined Brucon 2010?
A bit away from 400, which is the maximum capacity of the venue. So I think 380, 390.
Okay, but that keeps the venue easy accessible, keeps it at least solves the problem of long lines at the bar, makes it easy to do some catering and so on?
Well, except for actually making the food, catering is also still run by volunteers, everything, network, every part of the organization is done by volunteers, just that we can keep the conference as open and as cheap as possible. It's still an exercise. Prices have dropped this year compared to next last year. And for next year, we have to look at the figures of this year to calculate prices for next year. It's basically a non-profit exercise. But we still have a lot of administration and bills to pay. So it's just a few days after BrewCon. So unfortunately, the work is not done.
No, it's always the after yeah, conference
the
administration.
The last part.
Yeah. So if I'm, we were taking a look on the agenda of BrewCon 2010, and I thought it was really an awesome list of speakers and presentations. Last year, 2009 was already good, but 2010 is was even bringing more on that. Yeah. I think you can be proud on that, don't you think?
Well, the.
Oh,
I think the line is gone.
We lost the line.
We lost Benny. Oh, damn. Hey, Psychic, you were also at BrewCon.
Yeah, just looking at a picture of myself solving a TV Be Gone.
Whoa.
So, yeah, I'm shocked.
Hey, this is radio, yeah?
Yeah, no one can see it, so that's great. So don't go look it up on TwitPic or Flickr or whatever. So
who made it?
I have no. I think, actually, I think Mitch made it, or I don't know.
Okay.
There were several.
You lost me for a second, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There we are again.
Ah,
yep.
Benny's back. We were talking about the impressive list of presentations and so on. Benny, you agree with the total amount of new speakers and interesting presentations?
Well, we were happy with the program, but what was the added benefit this year was not only the good speaker set, but the variation of not just only presentations. We had a podcast meetup, which was a really cool exercise. People listened to several podcasts, and here we had several podcasters together having one big podcast with a live audience. So you guys helped with the audio.
Yeah,
I didn't really watch the entire thing, but the feedback I've seen so far is that it was really fun.
Oh, we had fun with it, at least to record it and make a little bit fun of Chris John Reilly.
The cheese.
Yeah. And the cheese was later on.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of the cheese. So the lightning talks was also really interesting formula, and the beer workshop, besides the hardware hacking workshops. The beer workshop was really popular, and I don't think we can ever have another BrewCon edition without this workshop.
I was wondering, people are talking about pictures that they saw. Where are these pictures?
Pictures from cheese.
No,
yeah,
just the pictures from BrewCon.
Pictures of BrewCon, I haven't seen much pictures from the visitors yet, but we had a team of people taking video and pictures, and we haven't published that ourselves yet. Mainly, we took enough pictures for ourselves, just if we ever want to make a nice poster again or anything, that we have some pictures. But yeah, it was a little bit striking that nobody has published a lot of pictures at the moment.
Well, I think go look on TwitPic or Twitter or Flickr, etc., you find loads of pictures using the tag BrewCon, definitely more than 100. So,
yeah, Flickr maybe in the last day, but I haven't seen a lot of this week.
TwitPic as well.
Which is fine. We still have all the videos of all the presentations to publish. We did live streaming. But for the people that missed it, the video team is still working at editing and converting the video, so that should be in the next weeks. as soon as they also had a little bit of rest in between, because they really, really worked hard during the conference to set up the live streaming. And
you found something, Brainsmoke?
Yeah, I found a Flickr photo set from Mitch.
Maltman 23.
Oh, okay. Place them in Hackerspace's Signal in the IRC channel. Or maybe.
Yeah, he published his pictures yesterday, but I didn't see that it was on Flickr.
I see, even see a picture of myself. Cool. Brucon, it's always a different. It's a mix of hardware hacking and a security conference, social engineering, and so on. Is this the focus for the Brucon team to organize, or is it more like we want to organize every year a Brucon which should fit that year?
I think the team and the topics that we have today, that's kind of the formula that we have and that we're keeping. Just my personal opinion, one or two talks on non-technical, non-security talks would be nice as well. Normally we had Jacob talking about Tor and internet privacy, but he had to cancel, unfortunately. And we had Mitch Altman talking about, well, how to make your ideas into projects, which was a really nice presentation as well. So we like to go for a mix, but a large focus is on security topics.
And 2011? I can know 2011 is just finished, but the Brucon 2011 is going to be there?
Well, probably. Like I said, it's really a big, it's becoming a big family of volunteers, and I've seen a lot of the volunteers immediately after conference telling that they were coming back for 2011. So we still have to deal with the aftermath and have a kind of debriefing meeting and maybe rest for 2 months and then do a kickoff meeting and see who shows up. But I think about 90% of volunteers came back from last year. So I have the impression that also 90% of volunteers of this year probably will come back for next year.
Well, I hope there's going to be a Brucon 2011, because I had a very nice conference hanging out in a hardware hacking village where everybody was having a lot of fun with electronics. It was a good add-on, in my opinion. And so do the other guys here in Studio Rest Space. Probably say
absolutely.
Yeah, Benny, I would like to thank you and the rest of the organization for organizing an awesome Brucon. And well, I probably see you in Japan.
And oh yeah, the hackers trip to Japan.
Yeah. So I will just say, good luck with the wrap-up of Brucon 2010. Get the administration right and fly to Japan with an open agenda and have some fun over there. You can enjoy the rest over there and it's good to go. Hey, thank you very much for joining in Signal.
And no problem.
See you soon, eh?
Okay, kambawa.
Welcome back to the Dev Random Show at Hackerspaces Signal, your favorite Hackerspaces radio station. We're in the last in the final 10 minutes of this radio program, and I would like to use this this moment to ask you if you want to get involved with Hackerspaces Signal. We got a nice agenda, but we want to fill it up with even more programs, and we even have the idea to open the slots on Tuesday night.
Yep.
What's the idea, Koen?
Well, we've been talking on the IRC channel for a while now. There are a lot of people who like to get into or who are into Creative Commons music and really want to share what they like with the rest of the world. I am one of those people, but there's some others as well. The Only Joey, Prototype X29A, and there's more. So what we are going to trying to do, I mentioned The Only Joey. He wants to do a show on Creative Commons metal music. He's ambitious. He wants to do a weekly show, so we'll put him on the Tuesday every week. He will do a tryout next week on Tuesday, 9 Central European time. He's also trying to do a video with that. Having said that, I myself want to do a monthly show as well with, well, you might have heard it on ETH0, the 8-bit or less with GMC show. So
yes.
I will be playing 8-bit music, 4-bit music, 3-bit music, 2-bit music, 1-bit music.
0-bit music.
0-bit music, yeah. We will have some 0-bit music, especially for Brain Smoke.
Yeah.
Prototype X29A wants to do something with a top 40 for Creative Commons music. This already exists. Basically adapt that to minus 1-bit music. I will try Dark Action. I will try. If you find me some, I will play it. So he's going to do something with that. So that's going to be really fun. So instead of being oriented on hackerspaces, technology, science, it's just going to be music, sharing great music, because there is a lot of great music out there that is Creative Commons licensed. It doesn't get played on the mainstream radio, so we have to play it.
Are we going to podcast the music?
Of course. We're going to podcast everything.
So at least I can bring it on my nutpod.
Yeah. So, and there are still slots there. If anyone is interested in a particular subgenre of Creative Commons music,
pop in the IRC channel,
exactly.
Hackerspaces Signal,
yeah,
and or send us an email, signal@hackerspaces.org.
Yeah, that also works. Yeah,
or just ping me fish or gmc@hackerspaces.org. You're welcome for that. In my opinion, we still don't have something like a maker show or so.
No, that was on the agenda, but that got lost somewhere along the way. We should get that going. But of course, it needs someone to pull that wagon and make sure that the show is there every month. We're already doing a lot, so
it's on my preferred list to listen to, actually. So maybe we should get Brie Pettis or something like doing a show.
Yeah, maybe
that.
And get Jaap involved from the local maker scene here in Holland. There's a lot of people here who could do the show. We should ask.
Yeah. So that was just a little bit about some more Signal stuff we would like to add to the agenda. Take a look on the agenda. There are some conference and activities going on this month. We got Ars Electronics, 30th of September till 3 October, for everybody who's in the neighborhood of Noisebridge in San Francisco. I was seeing the movies, psych, and...
You're going?
Yeah. Now I've seen the movies. I'm getting on a flight about 3 hours, so I have to start packing.
First flight to the States.
Oh yeah.
Hey, then we have Hack in the Box Kuala Lumpur, of course, and we're going to do probably our next Hackerspace Hour from there. And we'll talk about some people over there, also in the hackerspaces scene. And we got the Synchronous Hackathon 15 October and 16 October. It's going to be worldwide, and take a look on the Hackerspaces Wiki. Some short-term things. Tomorrow, there are the 2600 meetups again. Take a look on the 2600 website, where your local 2600 meeting is. Hey, guys, are you going to join 2600 tomorrow?
Yep. Definitely, yeah.
Yes.
Brain Smoke?
Brainsmoke
is brain dead.
Brainsmoke is coding.
Brainsmoke is probably not going.
Well, he is going. I saw it on the wiki.
He is. I put him on the wiki, so.
So he has to go. He has to pay. It doesn't matter if he goes. He has to just pay up and then stay home. I mean, it's more for us.
Taking a look on the wiki, there is some more over. We got Labortage 2010, 21 October until 24 October in Das Labor. And we have a Super Happy Death Belfast, probably Belfast, but the venue has to be decided in UK, and it's on 28th of October 2010. 29th of October, we have something in Hackerspace France, I think, HSF, Templab, yes. And the rest is for November, and we're going to mention that later on. What's more on?
I'm just looking at the schedule for our Signal, actually. We won't have. There's a Hackerspace Hour for next week. But I'm afraid there won't be a Hackerspace Hour because you're leaving to Kuala Lumpur, actually.
And it's a little bit hard to do live streaming from the airplane.
We'll see. Maybe we do a Hackerspace Hour. Maybe I'll just play some 8-bit music. I know people like that, so... it will be followed by a room IOI with Astera. And do you see what's there? Introducing the Sen Ex correspondent M. Marquis Bois.
I'm curious about that.
The week after that, we will start with the first edition of the Hacktivism Hour, a panel of hacktivists, people active with digital rights online. That will be a first. It will be hosted by Walter, and I'm looking forward to that because it's going to be quite a challenge, actually. Followed by the Hackerspace Hour from Kuala Lumpur, Fish.
Yes, and I'm not sure who is going to be in the show because I still have to talk to the guests who are going to join. We're not sure yet if we're going to do the live streaming because we have a time difference.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning, right, for you then.
But if you're going to take a look on the agenda and take a look on a sneak peek on the speakers over there and you would like to ask them some questions, just send me an email, fish@hackerspaces.org, and then we'll try to put your question into the Hackerspace Hour from then. Dr. Rex is going to join us, by the way, in Kuala Lumpur. So I think we got a nice list of people at least doing a Hackerspace Hour from there. Hey, this was a nice show again.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun at BrewCon, and I hope to do it again next year.
Definitely. I'll be there. I'll be collecting the shirts from every edition, so it will be one conference I will have all the shirts from.
Okay. Hey, everybody who's listening over here, thank you very much for listening. If you got any questions, signal@hackerspaces.org, and talk to you next time. This was the Dev Random Show.
And this is the song Time to Split by the James Quintet. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. We get signal. Main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackers, please.